I'm Eric Whitney. Tuesday's announcement that the federal government won't add the greater sage grouse to the endangered species list is being called a historic decision. That's because the threat of listing spurred state governments, ranchers, the energy industry, and environmentalists to come up with alternative strategies to protect the bird. Those strategies are being praised by many, but not everyone. For perspective on why the government's sage-grouse decision is such a big deal, we talked to University of Montana Law School professor Martha Williams. Williams has worked for federal land management agencies and Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. She teaches environmental law. Martha, thank you for joining us at Montana Public Radio.
Thanks for having me.
How unusual is it for the federal government to do that, to come up with an alternative strategy and instead of listing an animal?
Well, I'm hoping we're all learning, including the federal government, that that's where the Endangered Species Act can work best in using, I guess you could say, the hammer to galvanize all the interested parties to pull together and implement conservation strategies so that the species doesn't have to be listed. Is that a new wave or a new way of doing business? I don't think entirely. There's certainly precedent for the agency moving in that direction, but this is big news and the biggest one we've seen yet.
Everybody is talking about, well, isn't it great that we didn't have to use the Endangered Species Act to come up with an agreement to help save this animal? What's necessarily so terrible about using the Endangered Species Act?
Be careful, you're asking a true believer of the Endangered Species Act. So I think that's a great question. Why are we so scared of it? There are lots of reasons for that, but I would say we did use the Endangered Species Act. Even though the species wasn't listed, there were certain actions that took place and had to have a certain regulatory tone combined with lots of voluntary efforts that were so important. But it was that combination that allowed the Fish and Wildlife Service to make its determination not to list the species.
Can you maybe give us a thumbnail of what are the actions that are taking place that allowed the Obama administration to say, we don't need to list the greater sage grouse?
Their conservation easements, it's removing conifers, it's taking specific actions, for example, coming at it one with some money and support for landowners to take actions on their land in specific places to allow for better habitat and conservation. Taking actions in certain places and not other places. And then you have on federal land, for example, buffering and not disturbing those really important areas to sage grouse. And this is different than a lot of other species. What we know now with sage grouse, we know more and more, and we better understand those areas that are really important to conservation. We're better able to delineate where we need to take action or prevent action.
Those kinds of things come about had the federal government said, we're going to list the bird. Everybody agrees to do basically the same thing, but they get to come up with it instead of it being handed down by the federal government. Is that what's happening?
Well, that's no small potatoes, is for people to take the initiative themselves and have some ownership over it. But I do think it's more than that, and that by not listing the bird, there's certainly a bit more flexibility. Here's an example. Mm-hmm. There was a rancher from Nevada. He talked about two 11-year-olds, one his 11-year-old daughter, and the difference in approach of the federal government from when he was 11 years old and they rounded up the cows in his area and shot them versus his 11-year-old girl who goes out every day and flags fences and works with scientists to figure out what makes a difference on their land. And she's completely engaged and wanting to do it herself. That difference in approach is huge.
So if these voluntary agreements and conservation easements and other strategies, if they don't work, there's still consequences, correct?
Yes. Fish and Wildlife Service could come back and say, look, this species, the status isn't so great. We can always reconsider listing. That,
right.
This doesn't say they can't ever look at that again.
We've talked about how this is different because it's not the federal government imposing new regulations. But one aspect is that the federal government is imposing new regulations on federal land. Are those necessarily more or less strict than they would have been if the bird had been listed?
I don't think they're more strict in that had the greater sage-grouse been listed, then activities on federal land that take the species, harm, harass, kill it, disrupt nesting, those activities would have been prohibited anyway. But they are significant in restricting certain development in the areas that are identified as being most important to sage-grouse conservation.
So you're saying these new land use restrictions are more targeted, less of a blanket than they would have been had the bird been listed under the Endangered Species Act?
Absolutely. They're more tiered. So where the habitat isn't as crucial, then the restrictions are fewer and less onerous. No doubt this is going to be challenged in court, maybe before we even see the impact on the species. My guess is there are going to be two types of lawsuits. There will be a challenge on the decision not to list, and then that's where one of the factors is the adequacy of the regulatory mechanisms that are in place, meaning are there restrictions that have teeth? So there will be that line of litigation. Then I'm sure there will be organizations who will challenge the land use management plans and the restrictions that are in those.
Arguing that they're
too onerous.
Right. There are people that are of the belief that the Endangered Species Act itself doesn't work.
Right.
In your eyes, is there rock solid proof out there that the ESA does work?
Oh, I think the ESA works great in certain circumstances and that it really has helped for certain species, peregrine falcon or bald eagle. That really works when we figure out the cause that's harming the species. So DDT or where we have a specific action, that's an easier fix. But I would say for species where it's habitat loss, where there are many more factors at play, why don't we come at it from all angles like the sage-grouse? I think potentially could be more effective than listing it. But we'll have to see.
Right.
So I think the Endangered Species Act has been incredibly effective in some circumstances.
In this instance, the end goal is the same. If you list the peregrine falcon or the bald eagle as an endangered species, then that requires the government and others to take actions to preserve that species. This agreement does the same thing, but it's in your eyes, what's the big difference?
Exactly. The end goal is the same. We're trying to curb those mechanisms, those actions that we humans take that impact the species. And if we can address those and bring the species back without needing to list it, we're still conserving the species. I mean, that's what we're looking for.
It's the difference of you deciding to clean up your room versus mom telling you to clean up your room.
It's saying, you clean up your room, I'm going to come in and help you. I'm going to stand by you and give you some support in doing it. Not telling you how to do it, but doing it, what, side by side?
You're pretty optimistic about this sage-grouse agreement, and you think it has potential to work and represents real progress in this decades-long battle between industry groups and those who want to preserve wildlife?
It's a great step forward for the Endangered Species Act. I think it's important to keep that tool and to have it when we need it, but even more exciting if all these different interests can pull together for the conservation of a species. The possibility for success is that much bigger.
Going forward, what are you going to be keeping an eye on to see if it really works?
I'm fascinated by the voluntary efforts and that we have money supporting those voluntary efforts. Having that I used to work for the state, knowing how important it is for the states to manage wildlife within their borders.
For years now, the states have been going to the federal government and saying, you should let us manage wildlife, you know, like wolves and other species.
Right.
Trust us, we can do it. And the federal government has been reluctant to do that. So this is really an opportunity for the states to prove whether or not they can do that.
Yes, this is an opportunity for the states to show how effectively they can manage a species and conserve it. Yeah, let's see the states demonstrate what a good job they can do.
Well, Martha, thank you for joining us at Montana Public Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Martha Williams teaches environmental, wildlife, and public lands law at the Alexander Blewett III School of Law at the University of Montana. I'm Eric Whitney.